The man in the CCTV may have murdered everyone you worked with. Don't you want to help?
I don't know any cripples, all right.
Doors and windows were all locked, no forced entry. This was not a raid or a robbery.
Everyone's saying, like, the killer isn't human. Ushid'd have a lot of money by his brother.
Salter has motive. He's made threats to kill him. We can place him in the area at the time of the murders.
How's Judy?
She thinks it's cancer.
He was there at 10, and when I went to check in just now, he was gone.
From a locked cell?
Nobody disappears into thin air.
That was a recap of the previous episode. An old manuscript with the words "were murdered" followed by the word "chisel." Whitechapel. A candle flickers by a stone angel. Rupert Penry Jones. A poster reads 120 guineas reward. Hamlet of Ratcliffe murder. Phil Davis. A flash of a body hanging upside down with blood on the victim's face. Steve Pemberton. A car speeds through London by night.
We'll search all of London if we have to, but we'll find him.
Details: Marcus Salter, 39, 6 foot, slim build, dark clothing, runs with a limp. Patrols to be aware, this man is believed to be highly dangerous. Do not approach.
Murder!
Bloody hell.
DS Ray Miles and DI Joe Chandler climb out of their car and attempt to calm the hysterical naked man in a grimy one-way street. Miles makes a call and puts a coat around the man's shoulders. They pull up in Old Peppermill Street and head for a house on the corner. Miles peers through the letterbox in the blue front door. Chandler loiters by the railings around the front garden. Chandler heads into the garden. Miles follows him. They both bend down to look through a window, which is partially covered by a set of Venetian blinds on the inside. They spot lights flickering.
Call Llewellyn. Get Socko here now.
Yes, DS Miles, we have an incident.
In 1811, the coroner said that the late and present murders are a disgrace to the country and almost a reproach on civilization. While the exertions of the police with the ordinary power of the parochial officers are found insufficient to protect men's persons from the hand of violence. And the coroner has to record the most atrocious crimes without the possibility of delivering the perpetrators to justice and punishment. Our houses are no longer our castles, and we are unsafe in our beds.
The Socko team investigates some brutal murders within the house by torchlight. They find sheets tied and dangling from a window on the upper floor. There are flashes of old newspaper reports. Day, the man they found running naked through the streets, is in a soft interview room.
My name is Tom Knight. I'm a student, and I rent a room at the Emery's house. Just after midnight last night, the lights went out. And I heard Jan and Abby screaming. Then there was a big crash. So I ran onto the landing and saw Bill lying at the bottom of the stairs. There was a man standing over him with a hammer in his hand. The man turned around, so I ran back into my room. I didn't want to see his face because then he'd see me. I shut my door, or I pushed my wardrobe in front of it and used my sheets to climb out of the window. But then I just ran. I didn't even notice I was naked until the police found me.
Did you hear the killer come into the house? Did anyone knock at the door?
No one knocked at the door. And everything was locked up tight. 1 minute they were laughing at the TV. The next they were being murdered. The killer just appeared out of thin air.
He bows his head. Chandler is at the crime scene on the phone.
Widen the search for Marcus Salter. I want every available uniform and PCSO out looking for him. Yeah. Thank you.
In a white forensics coverall, he steps over the body of Bill Emery lying sprawled at the bottom of the stairs with a pool of blood around his head. Chandler enters the front room.
So, the two women, Jan and Abby Emery, were watching television when they were killed.
Massive blow to the head. No struggle. No contact.
Once again, quick and impersonal.
Don't expect a forensic breakthrough here.
It's just like the Salter murders.
And again, we have one survivor. Lola, teenage girl, she was out for the night.
Will Emery was upstairs. Hearing the screams, he ran to help. Fell down the stairs, breaking his right leg. The killer caved his skull in.
The killer has left us his footprints in Jan and Abby's blood. He killed them first and ambushed Bill at the bottom of the stairs.
But he didn't go upstairs?
No. No trace of him on the treads nor anywhere upstairs.
Well, so Tom Light's upstairs, sees him, and the killer doesn't go up.
Uh-huh.
Scared him off?
Prints stop here. They don't go anywhere.
The bloody shoe prints are on wooden floorboards.
So where did he go?
It's like he just vanished. Look at the prints. Look at how the left foot leaves a clear print, but the right is smeared as he runs. He has a pronounced limp.
By Marcus Salter.
It's very useful, thank you, Miss Pepper.
Lizzie. Sorry.
Excuse me.
Pretty Lizzie edges past Chandler and heads into the front room. At the police station, DC's Emerson Kent and Finley Marshall watch CCTV from Marcus Salter's jail cell.
Still no sign of him.
If he can escape from a locked cell, he could be anywhere.
The footage shows Miles and Chandler entering the cramped cell with an officer, D.O. Sean Pincher. They look around, then leave the cell, a flash of an eye peering through the darkness. It's actually a poster on the wall by the cells.
I don't believe in magic, Sean, and I don't believe in monsters either.
What are you talking about, sir?
There's only one way Marcus Salter could have escaped from his cell. You turned out the lights and unlocked the doorframe. It's too dark for the CCTV, so no one sees you.
And we didn't have to see you tonight. It had to be you because you've got the keys.
So? Why would you let him go?
He spoke to me. He spoke about my family. He wouldn't stop. He just kept talking and talking, getting inside my brain.
And what did he say?
At Hendon, they train you to cope with threats and violence, but nothing prepared me for last night. I had to let him out.
What do you mean you had to let him out? Three more people are dead. Why? Why would you do that?
I knew I shouldn't have done it. I didn't want to do it, but I didn't have a choice. You can't argue with the devil.
Go home. You're suspended.
Young Lola is in an interview room.
Just said she'd given you something to make you feel a bit better. Okay, Lola?
Nothing's going to make me feel better. My mum's dead. My gran and granddad.
I know, darling, and I'm so sorry.
Who's going to look after me now?
Oh, you've got lots of family. Don't worry, you'll be taken care of.
But not like before. They're not going to make me chocolate when I wake up at night. And they're not going to rub my feet when I watch telly. What if they won't drive me to school? I can't walk, can I? I've got bad knees. This is a terrible place. I told them I can't drink plain water and I'll get sick if I get dehydrated. And the food here is disgusting. I'll get ill if I eat this crap.
Lola. Lola. Do you know this man?
Marcus. Yeah, freak.
Why is that? Marcus Salter knew Bill Emery. They used to drink together until they had a fallen out over a non-payment of a bet.
Old family dead for what, 20 quid?
Money's definitely the motive. First with his brother and now with Bill Emery. Where is he?
Well, Salter hasn't been home, hasn't seen or contacted any of his family.
He hasn't been near his work, hasn't been seen by anyone who knows him.
Everyone in Whitechapel's looking for him. There's nothing.
He's vanished.
If he's not hidden away, then he's hiding in plain sight.
He can't be. He hates the daylight.
Where do you go to be in the dark in the daytime, where everyone can see you, but no one can see you?
Chandler and Ken share a glance. A small number of patrons watch a black and white film at the Rio Cinema.
The key to this whole thing is a diamond. Good. One living dead, one destroyed. Nine.
What we do, Margaret? We're going in the back way.
Kent shines a torch at some of the patrons, including a snogging couple.
Now,
Perv.
Now,
Kent spots Marcus, who throws up his hands, then bolts.
Stop! Stop, police!
He tried to run, so they're holding him there.
Ugh.
Kent, the people from the cinema.
The bloody public, fantastic.
They jump into the Land Rover and speed off. The cinema, an angry mob, batters the outside doors.
Word's got out then.
Miles hurries through them.
Yeah, all right, mind your best, you to come on down, please. Police officers, let us in. Thank you. Yeah, all right, thank you very much. We got him. Yes. Stay still.
I'm sorry, I forgot my crucifix.
Oh, yeah, mental to me, it's like the front.
Take him to the cinema.
Yes, sir. Come on. Get your car around the back of the cinema, sharpish.
They bundle Marcus into a car out the back.
Hurry, Kent.
Get us out of the car.
Die, Benson, die.
They speed away from the marauding mob. Miles enters Chandler's office, where Chandler's doing paperwork at his desk.
Marcus Salter has been charged and is remanded into custody with all the lights on.
Good.
Well, now you've got a bit of free time.
What's this?
Remember that Socko, Lizzie Pepper? That's her number.
Why, what? I mean, you
Well, she likes you and she's single.
You asked her?
Well, you weren't going to.
No.
Well, just have a drink. Give her a ring. You might have lots in common.
I know you're trying to be nice, but really this is way beyond your remit as a sergeant. I can manage my own life.
Don't lose that number. I worked hard for that.
He leaves the office, a flash of someone scrabbling around on a ceiling, defying the laws of physics. In a student house, a blonde woman opens her fridge and takes out a jug of milky blue liquid.
Who's been using my milk?
No one touches your milk, it's soya and it's blue.
I dye it blue, but it makes no difference because someone is still stealing it.
It's just milk, Lara.
Lara puts the milk down and shuts the fridge.
You're all thieving bastards! Next time I'm putting rat poison in it!
Lara's unaware that somebody is watching her. In his office at the police station, Chandler eyes Lizzie Pepper's number, written on a bit of notepaper. He folds it up and puts it away.
Oh, nice.
Are you happy?
Movie night tonight.
Oh, woman.
Good night.
Meg, listen, I've booked my Judy a bit of a spa day and she won't want to go on her own. I know you enjoyed your weekend away together.
Oh, take that, Dublin. It was fantastic.
Would you mind going with her?
Chocolate body wraps. Bloody hell, yeah. I'd love to.
Thanks. She needs something to take her mind off the scan, you know.
Yeah, and what about you?
Large one.
Chandler's about to call Lizzie.
Good night, Ed. Cheerio. Have a good evening.
Are you doing anything tonight?
Joe?
This is Charlie Cross, author of Jack the Ripper, The Last Word.
Ah, pleased to meet you. That's right.
And this is George Collier, author of Jack the Ripper, His True Identity.
Hello.
This is Joe. Joe hasn't written a book, but he is an avid reader.
Ah, what's your area of expertise?
Well, I know a bit about cricket.
Sports? Good, we'll bat those your way.
I think Joe could be a bit of a dark horse. Might give us a slight advantage over the British Museum.
They cheat with the internet.
Isn't this supposed to be for fun?
It's not fun when you lose.
Okay, Bowness, let's get this quiz.
Okay, you've not put the team name down?
No.
At the student house.
Where are you going?
Shop. I don't have any bloody milk. And no, I won't get you any chocolate.
Lara leaves the house at the rather quiet-looking pub quiz.
What is the name given to the parchment paper used to wrap fish or meat during cooking?
Papillote. Two L's, one T. Papillote.
You could become a regular team member if you like. We could do with another fourth.
What happened to your old fourth?
Oh, he's over there in Coventry.
Walter Grundy.
He sticks up his finger.
Charming chap.
Absolutely full of himself. He used to be team captain.
Team dictator. He'd never taken an answer of us because he thought he knew everything.
It'd be wrong.
But he just wouldn't listen to us. He'd write down his own answers, smug as you like.
It cost us the Christmas quiz.
So we said to him, you clearly don't need any of us. Why don't you go be a team on your own?
We've beaten him in every game since.
A harsh lesson, but one which must be learned.
Like a punishment?
What, for his pride, yes.
The whole team gives Walter the finger.
Name three people who could have been Jack the Ripper.
Oh, dear.
George Chapman.
Ripper questions have always been our undoing.
Georgie Fox said that if anyone deserved to die, it was her. She felt she deserved punishment for her bad behaviour. Georgie Fox and Lola Emery were both spoiled, selfish young women. The killer didn't spare them. He wanted them to be the sole survivors left on their own to suffer.
So the girls are the key, I knew it.
Oh, God. That means the murders weren't about money at all. Marcus Salter isn't the killer.
What term?
I think we've charged an innocent man.
Translates from the Latin, meaning elsewhere.
Alibi.
At the student house.
What's on?
Cartoons.
The power goes off.
Shit. Does anyone know the fuse boxes?
Yeah, the landlord.
The two girls get up.
I'm gonna go upstairs, look for the fuse box.
This house looks creepy.
One of the girls turns on a torch and paces around the darkened living room as the lad goes upstairs. There are flashes of the man scrabbling around on the ceiling. The electric fire in the student living room slowly folds away from the wall. Flashes of the student's mirror soaked with blood. By day, the police are in the house. Chandler steps over a blood-soaked body.
They were killed with hammer blows to the back of the head. Same ambush technique, no struggle. It's the same killer.
We had Marcus Salter in custody all night.
We're his alibi.
I'm sorry. We all hoped it was over.
We may have forensic science, CCTV and murder investigation manuals, but the truth is we're not doing any better than the parish constables of 1811.
Some photos are taken of the fridge's contents. Lara's things are all labelled. One label reads, Lara's falafel. Hands off or I cut them off.
Who the hell would want to steal cold falafel?
She's another survivor with a self-righteous, entitled attitude. Another girl who had to be taught a lesson in humility.
They shut the fridge. Flashes of past murders, news reports. A drawing shows two eyes with bright rays emanating from them. A girl hangs upside down, her face soaked with blood. Chandler heads through the police records basement.
Ed, we have to forget everything about John Williams and the Ratcliffe Highway. The girls are the key, but they don't have anything or anyone in common. Their lives never intersected. I want you to search the archive for a case where the murderer punished the victim by letting them survive.
I've been doing that, but there are thousands of cases, hundreds of years.
Ed, I have to go back upstairs and tell everyone what we're going to do next, and right now I don't know what I'm going to say.
As Chandler goes, Ed's shoulders droop. He sits down at his computer and switches it on. He crosses himself. Chandler's in the men's room. He paces around and rubs his temples with his fingertips. In the incident room, he stands before a whiteboard with photos of the victims lined up in all their gory detail. The office staff go about their business in a blur as Chandler focuses his steely gaze on the board.
Joe, I found this.
Richard Farley, California, February 16th, 1988.
He stalked a co-worker for 4 years, then turned up at work one morning and shot 7 colleagues dead to punish her for ignoring him.
That's interesting. First crime scene was a workplace.
Well, the Emerys was a family house. The students shared a flat. No work went on.
No. This is perfect. This is the connection. They were all workplaces. The Emerys had recently renovated their house. The student house had only just been turned into flats and bedsits.
So all our murder scenes were workplaces for a builder.
Find Sly Driscoll. I want another word with him now.
Yes.
Chandler and Miles follow Mansell up some stairs in a block of flats. They hurry along a corridor towards one of the flats, meeting DC Megan Riley and a uniformed officer approaching the same front door from the opposite direction. Red-shouldered Mansell barges the door open and the police enter the Spartan-looking flat, where the lights are off.
Have a look around, see if you can find anything.
The kitchen seems empty. In the living room, there's only a single camp bed, which Mansell looks underneath. Miles looks inside the oven. Mansell collects the post. Chandler finds a photo. Riley flicks through a paperback. Ditching the post, Mansell looks frustrated.
Nothing. So you hear that, isn't the photo of Driscoll?
Yes, sir.
No food.
Must have gone a while, then.
I mean, there's no food at all, nothing. Single bloke, he can eat and drink what he wants, and there's not even a crumb here.
Maybe he doesn't cook.
Miles opens the pedal bin.
No empty takeaway cartons in the bin.
Chandler scans around with a frown.
Not even an empty beer can.
There's no fridge.
I guess he lives on fresh air.
Like a ghost.
Mansell eyes Chandler levelly. Dave, Kent shows ID of Hobbit property.
Mr. Hobbit, DC Kent. Come to talk to you about Sly Driscoll.
Sly? He's a good lad. He's a great worker. He's a craftsman. He's very, very reliable.
He's of good character.
Don't find many like him these days.
I need a list of all the properties that he's worked on.
Well, we do everything from loft conversions, basement excavations, to shop refits and putting up shelves for old ladies. We get the work and then we subcontract the jobs. He's been on the books for a few years. All his stuff should be on here.
If Driscoll gets in touch, let us know. But be discreet. We don't want to spook him.
Cobbett frowns and leaves Kent at the computer. At the police station...
As you can see, Driscoll's worked on nearly 200 properties.
Including all three murder sites.
He worked on the conversion of the Emery's house. He was part of a maintenance contract on the student house, and he was restoring the Salter's tailor shop. And Driscoll had a limp.
The guy on CCTV had a limp.
And the footprints of the Emery house were smeared.
No, Driscoll doesn't have a limp. We've seen him walk.
He can hide it when he walks, but not when he tries to run. He was in a car crash. His leg got crushed. His best mate was killed in the accident.
Riley holds up the photo from the flat.
Paul Ingle.
Riley meets a brunette woman by the revolving doors downstairs.
Hi, Mrs. Ingle. DC Riley, we spoke on the phone. Thanks for coming in. Do you want to come this way? After you.
I really, really do appreciate you coming in and just answering a few more questions.
So your Paul was best mates with Sly Driscoll?
Yeah, they both sailed with the East End Yacht Trust, those big clipper ships. Paul was young. And small for his age. Sly was like a big brother to him. Really looked out for him.
We understand that Sly was in the crash that killed Paul.
That's right.
Can you tell me what happened?
They're sitting in reception.
The girl that was driving was called Lauren. She thought she was the best driver in the world. She had this hot hatch and she wouldn't listen to anyone. I remember Sly telling them at the inquest how they all begged her to slow down. But she just laughed and went faster.
Riley puts a hand on Mrs. Ingle's shoulder.
Such an arrogant girl. They were trapped in that car for hours. Sly said I kept shouting at Lauren to wake up, see what she'd done.
She was dead.
They all were.
Thank you so much.
A flash of the dead bodies in the car.
Fixed his leg, but they couldn't fix him up here. The crash was Lauren's fault and Driscoll couldn't forgive her for dying. He felt angry that she'd never have to answer for what she'd done, never feel guilt about it. Never suffer the loss of her best friends.
And Driscoll went to work at Salter's Tailors, met Georgie Fox, another arrogant, selfish, entitled girl just like Lauren.
And Driscoll wanted to punish her. Wanted her to feel what it was like to be surrounded by your dead friends, covered in their blood.
And then he punished Lola.
And then Lara. Over and over again, he wants them to feel what it's like. He wants to enjoy their suffering. hear their screams. To do that, he has to be close.
But on every occasion, the police were there within minutes. He would have been seen.
If you don't see someone, does that mean they're not there? Let's get Georgie Fox back in. And keep looking for Driscoll.
Do you remember him?
Nope.
He was the builder who worked on the shop. He was there every day for months. He was working in the shop on the day of the murders.
Yeah. He was there first thing doing something to the stairs. He was totally in the way. I kept tripping over him. It drove me mad.
When did he leave?
Don't know. Lunchtime? He was there, then he was gone.
Did you see him go?
What? No, he would have shown himself out.
Always.
We knew where the door was.
Thank you very much, Georgie.
Outside the interview room...
Georgie never saw Driscoll leave because he didn't.
You mean he was there all along?
They hurry downstairs at Ben Salter's tailor's.
Driscoll must have hid somewhere.
Well, there's loads of places to hide. My kids could disappear for days, you know.
Well, the tailors would have been in and out of these spaces. He must have hid when we're out of the way. Somewhere where he wouldn't be discovered until he was ready to emerge. What's this?
He opens a hatch in the floor and spies a cellar down below. He heads down some stairs into the cellar, passing a mass of shop dummies. He feels the far wall.
Anything?
No.
What are you doing?
Well, this cellar should be the same size as the room above, but stop short here.
False wall.
Chandler shifts a rail full of clothes as Miles comes downstairs. They find a metal grill in the wall behind the rail.
Well, that's just an old coal hole. There'd be nothing behind that but 19th century coal dust.
If it hasn't been open for 200 years, we'll know about it. Not a squeak.
He opens it up and grins. Miles shines his torch into the darkness beyond. Chandler uses his smartphone as a light. He gets down on all fours and crawls into the hole, which widens into a chamber with Jewish writing stamped on the walls.
What the hell is this place?
It's a secret synagogue. Built hundreds of years ago so that people could worship without fear of persecution. It's a good place to hide.
Nothing.
A paper bag.
Driscoll must have got rid of the bagel so that Georgia was sent on an errand.
You think you're safe? You've locked yourself in with a monster.
Flashes of someone looking through a crack in a wall. Old newspaper reports. Security footage of a man limping along the street by night. Chandler arrives at the Emery's house. The front door's open. He goes inside.
Oh.
Hey.
Hello, Lizzie.
Hey.
They shake hands.
On your own?
Yeah. After I heard about the secret synagogue, I thought I'd come back here and see what I missed. I had to find the reason why the footprint stopped, how he vanished. Come and see.
She opens a little hatch in the hallway under the stairs.
Come in.
She climbs feet first through the hatch, and Chandler follows her. They both stand up in the cramped, dark space beyond the hatch. They're face to face, almost pressed up against each other.
It's like you made the storage base and then didn't tell the family it was here.
I suppose you waited here until Lola was out.
Waited for the right moment.
Excuse me.
He ducks down through the hatch and back into the hallway, looking nauseous. Lizzie follows him out.
I'm sorry, are you claustrophobic?
Yeah.
He hurries out of the front door and marches off round the corner, leaving Lizzie on the Emery's front doorstep. At the hospital, there's an ultrasound on screen. Miles is by wife Judy's side.
This scan will show us any abnormalities.
Oh, my God, Ray, look.
She looks at Miles, who stares at the screen agog. Chandler arrives in the incident room at the police station by night.
No news on the hammer?
Nothing. Search the park, the drains, the beams.
I'm not being funny, sir, but if Driscoll can hide himself, he can easily hide a hammer.
Come on, don't lose your energy. We've got him on the run now. He's going to make a mistake. This is a waiting game.
Everybody, can I, I have an announcement to make about Judy. It turns out that the symptoms for ovarian cancer can sometimes be confused in an older woman with those of pregnancy. I'm going to be a dad again. And it's so too. Yeah. She's 6 months bloody gone.
Oh, it's wonderful. You the love babies, you're a lucky sod.
God bless you.
I don't know how I'm going to cope with a baby again at my age.
Champagne.
And a girl too. What do I know about girls? The only girl I know is him.
Oh, hello. What about me?
Oh, you're not a girl. You're one of us. hang on a tick.
Miles goes into Chandler's office.
Have you called Lizzie yet?
Unsurprisingly, I've been busy.
Everything I have, Judy, the kids, my whole life, all started with a phone call.
I'm in the middle of a huge manhunt for a mass murderer. I can't think about starting a relationship.
And I can't think about having a baby, but I have to. Life goes on. This job will always give you an excuse not to make that call, not to have that dinner. But this job won't keep you warm at night. Just call her.
He leaves the office. Chandler watches Miles raise his arms in triumph, then mutters to himself. Dolled up, Lizzie opens her front door to Chandler.
Come in. I'll be ready in a minute.
She smiles broadly. Chandler smiles politely and enters. She leaves him in the hallway. Nervous, he loosens his tie, then wanders into the untidy living room. He looks around, alarmed. He finds Lizzie smoking a cigarette in the kitchen.
I'm glad you called me.
Well, I wasn't going to, but my sergeant made me. But I'm glad I did. I mean, you know, it isn't a bad thing. I'm just always too busy to, you know, get around to stuff.
Sit down. Make yourself at home. Do you want a drink?
No. Where's your bathroom?
Downstairs.
He edges out of the kitchen and leaves Lizzie smiling to herself as she pours a glass of white wine. In the bathroom, Chandler eyes some hanging underwear with a frown, then dabs some ointment on his temples, trying to calm himself. He stares at himself in the mirror as he takes some deep breaths. He spots a pair of men's shoes on the floor by the toilet. He returns to the kitchen, where an increasingly vampish Lizzie fluffs up her long brown hair. Chandler smiles awkwardly.
Do you have a flatmate?
yes and no. He's a porter at the London, works nights. So he's here in the day when I'm at work, and I'm here at night when he's at work. I never see him. He only knows he exists because he eats all the food and leaves the lace eat up.
She rubs some cream into her lips and paces towards him, looking seductively in his eyes.
It's like living with a hungry ghost.
So you live with him, but you don't know he's there.
Exactly.
I have to go.
Really?
Chandler hurries off. Miles opens his front door to Chandler.
Thought you had a date.
It didn't work out.
You made your mind up bloody quick.
Chandler heads into Miles' kitchen, where he leans on the table looking fidgety. Miles sits down opposite.
We've been thinking that Driscoll was hiding in those houses on the day of the murders, waiting for a few hours. What if it's bigger than that? What if he's living in those houses for days? Maybe weeks.
biding his time, waiting for the right moment.
How could he live in the house without anyone noticing?
Well, they noticed that food was going missing and they blamed each other. That's why there wasn't any food in his bed, Sid. He's been stealing it from his victims.
He hides in the walls and comes out when no one's looking.
He's there when you're not, like a ghost.
And that's how he vanished off our radar.
I think he's already chosen his next victim. And is living in that house, right now, watching their every move, waiting for the moment that the woman goes out, so that he can kill everyone close to her.
A blonde woman.
Well, either we put a lock on the fridge, or we get a new nanny.
She eats as much as a grown man.
I think she's been at the cellar. Definitely missing a few bottles.
She glances at a loose floorboard in her walk-in wardrobe.
Well, don't you think she's put on weight? Well, if you don't want to do anything about it, fine. But don't moan at me when we have to pay for 2 food deliveries a week.
The haughty-looking late 30s woman stands in front of a full-length mirror and dabs at the crow's feet around her eyes with her fingertips. She plays with the skin at her temples, completely unaware of a man standing behind the mirror watching her. Completely still, the young man watches dispassionately, just inches away from the woman, who loiters a moment longer, then walks out of the wardrobe. The young man watches her go with icy blue eyes. Ed collars Chandler at the station.
Ah, I thought John Williams was innocent of the Ratcliffe Highway murders, but I was wrong.
I told you to forget about John Williams.
Yeah, but I can't. After Williams hanged himself in prison, someone did a search of his lodgings and found the clothes he wore. They found a jacket with a pocket encrusted with blood as if Williams had thrust a bloodied hand into it. Then a close search found a knife hidden in a hole in the wall.
He kept his weapons close.
Come on. It might be helpful, I hope so.
Thank you.
Came from every job Bristol worked on, you know, the process of elimination.
Major renovations, but there's a chance to build a hiding place.
I'll take out all the contract stuff, the gutters, broken window jobs.
And take out any property where the client lived on their own as well.
Cobbett reduces the on-screen list.
Leaves about 25 properties.
That's too many.
Take out any places being developed but unoccupied. Take out any properties where all the occupants were men.
Or the elderly.
I can't. Database isn't like that.
There's a joke complaint sign nearby.
Complaints?
Yeah, there's a file, but to be fair, we don't get many.
No, not from the customers, from the builders. Any rude or difficult clients?
Now, the last 10 properties, were there any overly entitled women? You know, self-righteous, superior.
No, Mrs. Vermillion. She's all of them. A lot of my boys walked off that job and refused to go back, but Driscoll said he wasn't bothered, he stayed till the end. He was good like that. He never let anyone get to him.
What was the job?
Complete remodelling of the house. Loft conversion, new bathroom, walk-in dressing room, and a new nursery.
How many children do they have?
2, I think. And a baby.
They arrive at the Vermillions as blonde Darcy comes outside.
Back in the house, police. Get back in the house now.
Police officers, madam, get back inside.
Your children are in danger. Just get... Open the bloody door.
Have you noticed food going missing, things being moved around?
How did you know?
Where are the children?
Upstairs, in the playroom, Sophia.
Chandler bolts upstairs and finds the 3 kids with their nanny, all of them alive and well.
Sophia, got to go, now.
Miles.
Quickly.
It's okay, I've got them. We're bringing them down now.
Back, don't let anybody else.
Quickly, please. Go with
this WPC and we're safe. Uniforms escort Dulcie, the nanny, and the kids away. Kent, Mansell, and Riley enter the property with Chandler and Miles.
Check that all the doors and windows are secure.
Are we locking ourselves in with him?
I don't want Driscoll to escape. He's somewhere in this house. In the walls, under the floorboards, watching us. Get him.
They fan out around the large, well-appointed house with uniformed officers patrolling the exterior. Mansell and Riley lock some French doors from the inside. Miles locks a window. Chandler gets down on all fours and shines his phone light underneath the chest of drawers. Kent goes through some cupboards under a bookshelf. They all meet at the foot of the stairs.
Well,
not downstairs.
They start up the stairs where somebody's watching them through a small slit in the wall. The stairs are overlooked by an artistic illustration of a skull. Chandler finds the walk-in wardrobe and opens it. He looks behind the clothes rail inside. Riley checks in the bathroom. Kent knocks on the walls in one of the bedrooms. Chandler slides the wardrobe door closed and goes over to the full-length mirror. He feels around the edges of the mirror, which is attached to the wall. He moves on. Kent and Riley are on the upper floor. Riley opens the door to an ensuite bathroom and glances inside. She's unaware that she's being watched. In the bedroom itself, she finds kids' drawings on the wall. Some of them depict sinister human eyes.
Anything?
Nothing.
Right, go downstairs and work your way back up to the top.
Okay.
Manson and Kent follow Riley back downstairs. Outside the house, the uniformed officers patrol the car park. Indoors, Chandler returns to the master bedroom with Miles. Furtively, Chandler examines the walls and the walk-in wardrobe. As he turns his attention to the mirror, Miles clocks the creaky floorboard. Miles bends down to inspect it as Chandler frowns in front of the mirror.
Miles.
Miles straightens and joins Chandler by the mirror.
I think he's here.
As Miles and Chandler peer directly into the glass, Sly Driscoll rises behind them and swings the loose floorboard. They turn just in time. Driscoll catches Miles, then dives through the mirror.
All right, get in!
Eyes wide and furtive, Driscoll edges along a narrow space behind the walls of the house. Using his phone light, Chandler edges along after him. Driscoll climbs down into a tiny space above the downstairs ceiling. In the living room, Kent and Riley look up at a shaking chandelier.
God, it's gonna bring the house down.
Driscoll crawls backwards into the cramped space running down the side of the house. With his body pressed back against the filthy inside wall, he carefully keeps himself stable by pressing his hands against the opposite wall and easing himself downwards. Chandler pokes his head out from above.
Driscoll, wait! We know about Paul. We know you've suffered. I understand. You can't get out. You can't escape. Please. It's over.
I know!
No!
Driscoll lets himself drop into the shadows at the base of the house. Desperate Chandler shines his phone light into the darkness and spots Driscoll impaled on a metal spike. A flash of an old murder illustration, the murderer also impaled on a spike. Driscoll's pale body lies on the slab in the mortuary.
200 years ago, this would have felt like justice.
You feel cheated?
He doesn't have to own up to what he did. He had a lucky escape.
That's his, right?
Pathetic, yeah. I presume he lost his leg below the knee in the car crash. It's quite unusual.
Something
you get on the
NHS. It's wooden. I suppose he
made it himself. It was very heavy.
Yeah. Chandler picks up the false leg and weighs it.
He wanted to keep his weapons close.
He unclips a leather strap and finds a hidden chamber inside the leg. A hammer drops out onto the metal tray. Chandler frowns at the hammer and puts down the false leg. The hammer's head is matted with dried blood. Miles looks round at Driscoll's body, which has a wide wound where the spike pierced his chest, just beside the heart. Miles and Chandler leave the mortuary.
To celebrate the new baby coming, just mainly family, but you're very welcome to come if you'd like to.
It's very kind of you, Miles, but I have plans.
Really? Well, good for you, sir. I hope you have a good time.
I will.
Chandler is in the police station by himself. He switches off a desk lamp, leaving the main office in half light. He carries a waste paper bin in one hand and goes from desk to desk, picking up waste paper and putting it in the bin. He puts the bin down and rubs his hands together. He scans around the office, looking satisfied. ITFC audio description. Next time.
I'd heard you'd found an arm. We found a torso.
How did she die?
She was poisoned. She would have felt like she was burning to death.
What's in that house is none of your business.
The Thames torso mysteries of the women were never identified. I'm afraid they never found their heads.